Thank you. It's a real pleasure and an honor to be here and to be back in Brazil. Thank you for having me. You know, we talk about entrepreneurs as something like it's nice to have. Entrepreneurship is something we add on. Brazil needs to have better policies to have entrepreneurs. But entrepreneurs are what make life possible. Entrepreneurs are what make the world in which we live possible. There is no modern world as we know it today without entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurs are not just an add-on. They are the essential. Without people like Peter Thiel, without my colleagues here on the stage, we are still back 200 years ago, where life expectancy is 39. 39. A lot of you are dead. I certainly am. And IFL members, you know, they're capped at 35. You're all approaching death, right? I mean, it's hard to imagine what life was just 200-300 years ago before entrepreneurs unleashed the Industrial Revolution on us, until they created the modern world in which we worry now about, can we live to be 150 or maybe eternal life, as Peter Thiel would like. And I hope he's right, and I hope his investments work. I certainly am anticipating living to be 150, buying products from Peter Thiel's companies. We take entrepreneurs for granted, but everything in modern life depends on the entrepreneur. It is entrepreneurs who discover new opportunities and create wealth. People talked about here about the Brazilian attitude towards the profit motive, towards wealth creation, how that attitude is negative. If you want to change one thing about Brazil, if you want to change one thing in order to secure a positive future for Brazil, then that is what you need to change. It is the profit motive channeled through the entrepreneur that makes wealth creation possible and therefore lifts countries, individuals and countries out of poverty and to prosperity and success. Without having the perception that the profit motive is moral, that the profit motive is virtuous, it is good to want to make profit. It is good to want to make your own life better. It is good to want to make your own life better by creating products that make everybody's lives better. You cannot be a successful entrepreneur without making the world around you a better place to live. You cannot become a successful entrepreneur in a free country without enhancing the lives of all those who you trade with, because the essential characteristic of trade is win-win. So how do we create a world in which entrepreneurs are plentiful, which entrepreneurs can be successful, which entrepreneurs can rise up and help raise everybody that they engage with, raise the standard of living of everybody they trade with? Well, I think Mr. Ling indicated, right? What do entrepreneurs need? They need to be left alone. They need to be left free of coercion. They need to be left free to think, because all entrepreneurial activity ultimately is activity of the mind. All entrepreneurial activity is about discovery. It's about thinking. It's about figuring out something new, something that's value creating that nobody else is doing. And to do that, the human mind must be liberated. And to liberate the human mind means to liberate us, to liberate the individual, to allow us the freedom to think, to produce, to create, to fail, but to try again, and to keep trying, and to benefit when we are successful, to keep the profits that we make. So it's easy. I like to tell audiences, it's easy for countries to become rich. It's easy to be successful. We know what works. It's freedom. It's letting people be free of coercion to follow their reason, to try out their ideas to succeed, to fail, and to prosper. Now, I don't want to comment on Brazilian politics. I know that is the issue of the day. You've got a presidential election. I get in trouble enough commenting on American politics. I get into a lot of trouble with that. But the theme of this conference was beyond left and right. And I wanted to just propose a different way of thinking about politics for a minute, because I really think we need to get beyond left and right. The fundamental question in politics is not whether you're on the left or on your right. The fundamental question in politics is, where do you stand on the question of what is the most important unit in society? The fundamental challenge of our time is collectivism versus individualism. The fundamental question of every era is the question, politically, is the question between collectivism and individualism. And we live in a world today, and maybe it's always been this way, but certainly today, where both left and right have declared their loyalty to collectivism. Left and right. If you believe in freedom, you do not believe in collectivism. Collectivism essentially is the subjugation of the individual to the group. Name the group, the proletarian, the state, the nation, whatever that, the race these days, whatever the group happens to be. That is anti-liberal, it's anti-freedom, it's anti-the entrepreneur, it's anti-everything we should stand for. So we need a new political spectrum. Not one that goes from left to right, but one that goes from collectivism to individualism. If we value prosperity, if we value freedom, if we value entrepreneurship, and we'd like to see entrepreneurs thrive, then let us reject everything that has to do with collectivism, and let us stand and fight together for individualism. Thank you.
Wow, you ask a deep question. I think it's the most important question in the world. So this is the question. Microsoft changed the world. Bill Gates made the lives of billions of people around the world better. Microsoft has changed the lives of more people than maybe any other individual in all of human history. Indeed, as I said, entrepreneurs are in the business of making people's lives better every single day. How much moral, ethical credit do they get for it? Zero. Negative, actually. How dare they make money at the same time? I'm learning from you. How dare they? How dare he make money by creating the biggest fast food company in the world and making all of the lives of every customer better? But he's making money doing it. That's not moral. That's not ethical, we are told, right? And yet, tone it down a little bit, okay. A little bit of money. No, he makes a lot of money. And he should be a little bit on each piece, but you add it all up. But he should be, he should be proud of making a lot of money. The fact that you make a lot of money means you've changed lots of people's lives. It means you've created a lot of wealth. It means you've made the world a better place a lot, not a little bit. Making a little bit of money, making a lot of money, ooh, that's cool. And then, notice when Bill Gates, who's just changed the world, is a villain. People don't really like him. But then he starts a foundation. He leaves Microsoft, God forbid you make money. And he goes, and he starts giving money away, and not even giving money away near where he lives. Because Seattle, you could do a lot of philanthropy in Seattle, but no. He has to go all the way to Africa to do his philanthropy, as far away from him as possible. Then he's a good guy. He's still not great. He's still not Mother Teresa. Why? He lives in a big house. He's still got a lot of money. He flies on a private jet. How would we make Bill Gates a saint? How do we make Bill Gates a saint? You ever seen a saint? You see the paintings in the museums. Have you seen a painting of a saint smiling? No, because the whole point of being a saint, the whole point of being, according to our moral code, the whole point of being a good person is to suffer. The way to make Bill Gates a saint is to make him suffer. Like, sell the, move into, give the house away, move into a tent, right? Give all the money away, and if you could bleed a little bit for us, then he's a good person, right? This is the morality that we live in. Build something. Be successful. Make something of your life. Make the world a better place. Eh. Give money away, which somehow you have. That's good. Sacrifice, that's good. Suffer, that's good. No. Bill Gates made the world a better place, a million times better than Mother Teresa. He should be the saint, not she. Now, why is this? And this is why anybody in this room, and I don't think there are a lot of you, but anybody in this room who has not read Atlas Shrugged yet, or Atlas Revolts in Portuguese, go read it. Because at the core of this is a corrupt moral code, ethical code. A moral code that tells us that the purpose of our lives is not to live. It's not to make our life the best life that it can be. That the purpose of life is to sacrifice for others. That the purpose of life is to make other people happy. Why? I love you guys, but I love me more. And you love you more. And he loves him more. You can tell, right? But that's good. And our moral purpose in life should be to make our lives, our own lives, the best lives that we can have. We have one life. We have one shot at it. Make the most of it. Live. Live fully as a human being. Flourish as a human being. Other people can take care of themselves. You take care of you. That is a moral code of freedom. That is a moral code of personal responsibility. That is a moral code of entrepreneurship. That is a moral code for a future of prosperity and success and wealth. Take care of yourself. Make your life, your happiness, your flourishing, your moral responsibility, your one moral responsibility. You want to help some people? Fine. But that's not where you get your moral credit. Helping yourself is where you get your moral credit. So go out there, be an entrepreneur, and don't apologize. Make money and don't apologize. You know, as long as you're not stealing, cheating, lying, as long as you're making it honestly, then you have made your life something. You have lived. You have been passionate about life. You have taken a vision you have up here and made it a reality in the world out there. What could be more noble than that? Businessmen are the most heroic, noble people in the world. We shouldn't have statues of generals and stupid politicians and anybody. We should have statues of business leaders, the people who actually make the world great. Yeah, so we won. We've won a long time ago, right? Capitalism works, socialism doesn't. All you have to do is look to the northern border and see what's happening in Venezuela, as if we needed one more example of the complete misery caused by socialism. Everywhere it's tried, every time it's tried, no matter the continent, no matter the century, no matter the decade, socialism fails. And the opposite is true as well. Every time capitalism is tried, to the extent that it is tried, it succeeds. You free up China a little bit, and boom, wealth is created. You free up India, wealth is created. And of course, as I mentioned before, 300 years ago, before capitalism, we were all dirt poor. All of us were dirt poor.
and capitalism made us relatively rich. It extended life by more than double, maybe triple. It's made life so much better. So not only have we won the economic argument with great economists like Mises and Hayek and Friedman and others, but we've won the existential question. History proves unequivocally that socialism, statism, collectivism are failures, and that freedom and capitalism works and are enormous successes. And nobody cares. Nobody cares. Everybody wants to be a socialist. Nobody wants to be a capitalist. Everybody wants to be poor. Everybody wants to die of starvation. Everybody wants to be oppressed. Everybody wants to have no freedom. That's what socialism represents. But they all want it somehow next time not to result in that. So I think we should all ask ourselves, why? Why is socialism so attractive? It's not because it succeeds. It's not because it produces anything. It's not because people are wealthy and, you know, die old and have happy lives. It's the opposite. So why is it successful? Why do people love it? And my argument, Ayn Rand's argument was that people love socialism because it's consistent with the moral, ethical beliefs that we hold as a culture. We think sacrifice is noble. Well, the socialists want to sacrifice you in the name of nobility. If you believe that suffering is good for the common good, for the public interest, then socialists are very good at suffering. They have fine-tuned the art of suffering. They can make you suffer all the time in the name of the common good. As long as we believe that the common good, the public interest, other people's well-being is the moral standard of a good life, of being virtuous, of being noble, of being good, then socialism wins every single time. Every single time. The real revolution that we need is not an economic or political revolution. Those come afterwards. You know, people say politics is downstream from culture. It's become a very popular thing to say, right? Politics is downstream from culture, which is true. But what's culture downstream from? It's downstream from ethics. It's downstream from morality. It's downstream from philosophy. If you want to change the culture and therefore change the politics, you have to change the moral beliefs of the people. You have to get rid of this altruistic, and I'm sorry if I offend anybody, Christian morality of sacrifice, of altruism, of the idea that other people's happiness is what's important. And we have to replace it with something positive, because just being anti is not good enough. We have to replace it with a morality, a nobility, a virtue of self-interest, what Ayn Rand called rational long-term self-interest. A morality that says that, no, the purpose of life is your own happiness. But not, you know, whatever you feel like doing, whatever the moment strikes you, whatever the emotions drive you. No, what in reason, in rationality, really leads to long-term flourishing. To be rational, to be honest, to have integrity, to be just towards other people, to treat people the way they deserve. Right? Not to sacrifice, but to trade. Why would you sacrifice? Sacrifice, by nature, is a win-lose proposition. If somebody doesn't lose, it's not a sacrifice. If it's win-win, what do we call it? Trade. I will take win-win over win-lose any day. Because win-lose always turns into lose-lose. And I don't want to lose. So what we should build is a structure, a moral structure, on the idea that human relationships should be about win-win. That human relationships should be about individuals pursuing their own self-interest and interacting with one another because it's in your self-interest. That the fundamental moral purpose in your life should be to figure out how to live the best damn life you can live for you. Now, if you had that morality, if you wanted to live a good life, if you cared about your own flourishing, then what kind of world would you want to live in? What kind of politicians would you want to elect? Politicians would tell you what you can eat and what you can't eat, what business you should open and what business you shouldn't open, how much you should pay your employees and how much you're not allowed to pay your employees. No. If you want to live for yourself, if you want a happy, successful, flourishing life for you, you want politicians to leave you alone. You want to make decisions about your life, about your business, about your trading, about your consumption, about how you live your life. You don't believe in authorities dictating to you, coercing you. Individuals who want to flourish as individuals want to be free. Freedom is a consequence. Freedom is a consequence of the idea of individualism. Freedom is a consequence of the morality of individualism, of the idea that what matters, the only thing that matters politically, is the individual and his ability to lead a flourishing life for himself. And individuals who believe that don't succumb to authority, don't choose between left and right. They choose freedom and only freedom. The only standard by which we should measure politicians is the extent to which they will reduce the amount of coercion imposed of us, and ideally reduce that amount of coercion imposed on us to zero. Because freedom means, as Ling said, the absence of coercion. We should strive towards absence of coercion, not tinkering with regulations, not reducing regulations, eliminating regulations, eliminating controls, eliminating restrictions. For that, just returning, you need a morality of freedom, a morality of individualism, a morality of self-interest, and we need to reject. And this is why it's hard. This is why it's so damn hard. Because, again, we won the economics, we won history, we won everything. But what makes it hard is that we have to reject a moral code that's been instituted among us for 2,000 years and is ingrained in our souls, and we need to take it and put it in the trash bin of history and adopt something new, something better, something that's consistent with capitalism and freedom.